committed herself to Naomi to return from Moab to the city of Bethlehem. She's going out today to work for their food. What Ruth does not know at this point is how God is using the decision she's making in everyday life for his ultimate glory and for his purposes. Perhaps you've experienced decisions that you've made when you thought you were doing the right thing, the thing that needed to be done, the thing that should be done, and then later realized how much more God had intended and intended to do through the what appeared to you to be at that time the ordinary circumstances of life. In 1970, Patty and I decided to move to the Nashville area. We came here so I could continue my education. It seemed like the right thing, the sensible thing to do. We did not plan for this area to be our permanent home. We would be here maybe 3 years and then go back. I thought I was coming just for the education. And God allowed that. He allowed me to complete that. But in the process, he began to move in our lives in ways that began to fulfill his purposes for us. We began to fellowship at a body of believers and share close Christian fellowship there with people who we still share that fellowship in part today. We began to be taught his word and to be discipled. And in that process, life began to change. And the focus of life, especially for me, began to look different and began to change. And as you've noticed, we never returned to our roots in West Virginia. We visited often in the early years, but this became our home because this is where the Lord ended up, I believe, placing us in working in ways that were never anticipated when we came this way. We'll see that occur in the life of Ruth today as we look at this second chapter in the narrative of Ruth. Turn with me to that in your text, whether it's paper or electronic. And we'll begin in these first seven verses to look at how God uses something as ordinary as the barley harvest to introduce Ruth to an important figure in her life. Look with me at verse 1. Our author writes, "Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz." The very first thing our author does is to introduce us here to Boaz, because later in the chapter, Boaz will become the key male figure. You remember from the end of chapter 1, Ruth and Naomi went to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. So that's where we are chronologically on the calendar, if you will. They're in Bethlehem, which means the house of bread, and it's just in time for the first crop to come in, which was barley. Food would be plentiful at this time. But we're introduced first here to Boaz. We're told two things about him, that he was a relative of Elimelech, Naomi's deceased husband, who died in Moab, and that he was a man of great wealth. Now, it is apparent, as you'll see in this text today, that Boaz did have financial resources. Wealth there probably means more than that. It probably speaks also to his character, the quality of the man that Boaz was. And we'll see that for ourselves as this narrative unfolds today. But after the brief introduction to Boaz, let's look at verse 2, because we turn back to Ruth and Naomi. "And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I might find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. Notice here in verse 2, the initiative was taken by Ruth. She was a woman of action. There had to be for them, without resources, a need for the basics. They needed food. It was the time of the barley harvest. There was a great opportunity for them to get some grain at this time. But Ruth, out of great respect for her mother-in-law, seeks her permission to go and glean in the fields. Let's talk for a moment about barley. Do you know what barley looks like? Have you ever held barley in your hand? Probably haven't harvested barley, at least not like it was done at that time. Let's look at a couple photographs and get a bit of an image as to what this would have been like. Here's barley at harvest time. Notice the heads. That's what these are called. The heads, they've got grain inside the shell that goes around them. That's barley ready to be harvested by the reapers. Now let's see how they do that with our next slide. I particularly like these because I think this is very much like how it would have looked in the time of Ruth. You have the reapers who have sickles, and they bring those sickles right at the base of the barley stalks, and the barley falls, and then the stalks are put together in sheaves. These are sheaves, and a sheave is just a bundle. You notice how they've gathered up the stalks, they've tied them, and left them in sheaves so they could be gathered and taken in. It's the same idea of baling hay. You know, you bundle it up. We package it now through a machine called a baler and then move it to wherever we need it. But that's the harvesting of the grain we know as we call barley. Now let's look at the final product. There's the grain. The grain that is available to be roasted, to be eaten, to be used to make bread. This is sustenance for them. That's what Ruth was after as she went to the fields to glean. Ruth said she wanted to glean in a field where somebody gave her favor, a place where they would let her pick up the leftover stalks. Get the imagery now in your mind. You've seen the sheaves. As the reapers are harvesting and bundling the stalks of barley up, some will fall by the wayside. There'll be a little left over. That's what Ruth wanted to go in and glean, to pick up the leftovers from the harvest if someone would grant her favor and let her do that. Well, the Lord was involved in all this. In fact, in the law, God made provision for the poor and the alien or the stranger during the harvest and specifically instructed the farmers to leave grain for the poor. Leviticus 23:22 is not the only place, but it is one place where that's set out in the law. Look what it says. When you reap the harvest of your land, moreover, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field. In other words, don't go all the way to the edges. Leave a little. Leave a little barley standing. Nor gather the gleaning of your harvest. Don't try to get every bit of grain that's there. You are to leave them for the needy and the alien, for the poor and those who are strangers in the land and who would also be without resources. And he says, I am the Lord your God. This was God's direction, God's command here, that certain amounts were to be left. The owner got the bulk of it, but certain amounts were to be left for those who were less fortunate. Let's look on to verse 3. So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. I'll stop there. Do you think maybe gleaning at that time was hard work? Little return, lots of effort. First of all, you had to find someone who followed the law. Not everybody did. We know what that's like, don't we? When it's ours and it's our harvest time and it's our cash crop, we want every bit. We want all that's ours for us. Don't worry about those who are less fortunate. That's a typical attitude. It prevailed then as it does now. So she gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. She wanted to find a good place, and she just happened to come to Boaz's field. Some say, did Ruth get lucky that day? Just coincidentally got to the right place? No. Ruth was under the protection and in the plan of the Lord. He made provision for her. She did not know it. She came to a field that seemed to work, and that's where she gleaned, and it happened to be, and not just happenstance, but the providence of God, it was the field of Boaz. We've read the entire narrative. We know the blessing of God is going to come to Ruth through Boaz. However, at this point, Ruth has no idea of such things, or even that her life would intersect with a man by the name of Boaz. What was Ruth doing? Ruth was doing that day what needed to be done for Naomi and her to provide for them. They needed food, and Ruth took the initiative to say, let me go glean in the fields so we'll have grain. And at that same time, in such an ordinary circumstance of life, God was working. He was superintending what was happening. Jim talked about the blessing of God in his life. As he's gone through life, all of a sudden, God, superintending in the circumstances, provides. He does that for us in the ordinary circumstances of daily life. As we do the right thing, the thing that needs to be done. Ruth was doing that here. No glamour, no glory, hard work, but they needed food, and she's out there. Our job is simply to trust Him with where we are in life, to accept where we are, and trust Him to fulfill His purposes in and through us. What Ruth did was the ordinary or even the mundane, gleaning fields for leftover barley stalks. And yet God was orchestrating even that in Ruth's life, when it all seemed so simple and ordinary. I love the truth in Proverbs 16, verse 9, that says, the mind of a man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. Ruth planned to go out gleaning, and God took her to exactly where she needed to be. She didn't even know it at this point. But let's see, as Boaz now comes onto the scene. Look with me in your text at verse 4. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you. Here's the boss coming to the field to see how his men are doing. His opening words to his men say much about the character of Boaz. He was a godly man. His desire, now think about this, It's harvest time. This is his cash crop, one of them. It's harvest time. His first words were not, "How's the harvest? How much do we have in? How many sheaves today, guys, have we put together?" His concern was that the presence of the Lord be in the field with his men. "May the Lord be with you," Boaz says. His workers responded with a blessing of their own. "May the Lord bless you." You know how much influence a boss, an overseer, an employer can have on employees when he responds in a spiritual way. When he initiates, I would say it's unlikely without his words you would have heard the kind of response from the reapers back to their employer to say, "May the Lord bless you." But his influence brought that out of their mouths back to him. Great influence. And how nicely he weaves the Lord into the workplace in a great way. Yahweh is acknowledged. He is there. In that sense, Boaz is a model for all of us who supervise others in the workplace. You're going to see him here, and every bit of what he says, every word that comes out is characterized by grace. By grace. Boaz is concerned about people. "May the Lord's presence be with you," he said. He's concerned about them. You can just tell from Boaz's arrival that there's more going on in the barley field of Boaz than just the harvesting of grain. And how that should be true of us. There should be more going on in our offices, in our workplaces, than just the labor in which we're engaged and the profit that comes for us from it. Boaz is an example to all of us in the workplace. Watch this now. Verse 5. "Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, 'Whose young woman is this?'" He's looking at Ruth. He says to his foreman, whose young woman is this? Meaning likely, whose daughter or whose wife is this woman? He immediately recognizes somebody in the field gleaning that is not known to him. And he asks about her very specifically. To whom does she belong? He wanted to know about her. Boaz was concerned about people with whom he had contact. He called her a young woman, which would say, I think we can safely say, there was a big age gap between Ruth and Boaz. He sees her here as a young woman. He wants to know about her. And the servant in charge of the reapers replied, "She is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab." Word of Ruth has spread, hasn't it? Even the foreman in the field knows history about Ruth. He knows about her. Verse 7. "And she said," this is still the foreman talking, "'Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.'" In other words, when Ruth got to the field that morning, she went to the foreman and said, "May I have permission to work in your field and glean after you bind up the bundles of grain we call sheaves?" Interesting, the approach that she took. Then she came, the foreman obviously gave her permission. I would suggest to you, reading between the lines just a little, knowing who his boss was, Boaz would have wanted him to give this young woman permission to glean the leftovers there in the field. Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. She's been sitting in the house for a little while. The point here is that she'd worked hard since arriving that morning. I was amazed to read that this little phrase, she's been sitting in the house for a while, is apparently an extremely difficult Hebrew phrase to translate. So the scholars have been everywhere trying to figure out what it means. The simplest solution seems to be that the foreman said, she's been here and she's rested only a little while. In other words, this woman has been here. She's been about her business. She's worked really hard all morning. The servants had taken notice. Now the scene will shift because Boaz will have direct contact with Ruth as we look at verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, listen carefully, my daughter. Those are words of a man, aren't they? Speaking to a younger woman, kind of like a dad figure embracing her as a young gal and saying, listen carefully to me, young lady, my daughter, calling her an affectionate term. Do not go glean in another field. Don't want you leaving here to go anywhere else. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw. We now see a little bit more into what it was like in the fields for a young woman to be gleaning there. When Boaz knows who this is, and he goes to Ruth, he says, stay here, right here, follow my maids around where they're gleaning. Don't go anywhere else. Because, he says, here I've commanded my workers not to lay a hand on you. If it was important enough for Boaz to say to this young foreign woman, don't go anywhere else because these guys know they can't touch you, then you know what the risk was for a young woman like Ruth to be gleaning in the fields alone. There with male workers, not a good situation, not a safe place to be. Boaz made it safe here. I've commanded them not to touch you, and furthermore, when you need a drink of water, you go to the jars that have the water for the servants. You drink with my workers. I'm going to be sure that you're protected. He's going to do more than that, and you will have water as you labor out here in the hot sun. He's caring for her. And he declares perhaps the first anti-sexual harassment policy. And I trust he made it quite clear to his workers. What a treat to have an employer like Boaz. He doesn't need a rule somewhere. He just comes in and says, guys, listen to me. She's off limits. Nobody lays a hand on her. And furthermore, she gets to drink what you drink. I'm taking care of this Moabite woman who's here. Let's see Ruth's response in verse 10. She fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? I think it's out of deep gratitude that Ruth just falls before Boaz. She is overwhelmed by this man and his generosity to her. Why would you even care about me? I'm a foreigner. I'm at the very lowest end of the social ladder here in Bethlehem. And you're noticing me? Unbelievable to her. It says more about the character of our man Boaz. Why would a man in his position be so gracious to her, as she had no status in Israel? But Boaz didn't look on her in the way most people would have. Boaz had insight into the character of Ruth. Look with me at verse 11 and we'll see it. Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people you did not previously know." What I think we have here is Boaz had never met Ruth, obviously. Who was that woman there? But Boaz had heard about Ruth, just as his servant had. And Boaz knew the sacrifice Ruth had made for Naomi, leaving the safety of her country to come to a people that she did not know, the safety of her family. And listen to what he asks of the Lord in verse 12. "May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." That's the key. This had come to Boaz, but the most important thing to him was, "You've sought refuge under the wings of the God of Israel." The God of Boaz. And he says, "May the Lord reward you for what you have done." And we'll see Boaz be part of God's reward and part of the wings of God's refuge there in the way he treats Ruth. Verse 13. "Then she said, 'I have found favor in your sight, my Lord. For you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants.'" There's so much we haven't been told here. I think about the conversation when Ruth said to Naomi, "May I please go glean in the fields to get food?" What was in Ruth's mind there? She knew it was a difficult and dangerous endeavor. What was in Naomi's mind? I dare say same thing. Her daughter-in-law going out alone as a stranger and a foreigner in Israel to glean grain in the fields with the workers. Difficult circumstances. We get some insight here where Ruth says to Boaz, "You have calmed my heart. You have brought me peace. Comfort has come to me because of your kind words. Go nowhere else. Stay right here. You'll be safe here." Even with the great gap in social levels, it's all the more amazing that Boaz would extend this kindness to the servant girl. We see hesed, that loyal love, throughout the book of Ruth. The term appears three times, but the act appears more often than that. And that's what we have here. As Boaz acts in a way of loyal love toward the daughter-in-law of Naomi because of the great sacrifice she has made. And he seeks to extend hesed to her, even as she had extended hesed to Naomi. It's a great, great account, and much we can learn from it. But it's not over. The day continues. Look at verse 14. "At mealtime, Boaz said to her, 'Come here, that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar.' So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left." This is the midday meal. You know, farming then, a lot like farming now. One of the great things you look forward to if you farm is lunchtime. You know, you get to stop and you get to eat, and then you go back at it. Ruth, I dare say, because of the economic circumstances of Naomi and Ruth, did not have a lunch bucket, so to speak, with her that day. She had no lunch. Boaz sees her and says, "Ruth, come on and sit here with the reapers and eat." What a blessing to the Moabitess to come sit at the table. He extended grace. Not only could she sit at his table and eat, but he's the one who served her the roasted grain. He personally served Ruth. What a testimony that was to his workers of the way he regarded this young woman. He transcended all race and class differences as he ministered to her. And he did it among his employees, right there at mealtime. She had a full stomach, and she had some left over. Verse 15, when she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servants, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her." In other words, she doesn't have to be in the corner of the field. Let her glean, remember the sheaves? Let her walk in among them to find grain, and don't dare insult this woman as she works. Verse 16, and you shall purposefully pull out for her some of the grain from the bundles and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. Wow. Not only can she glean where she wants to among the sheaves, but you're going to make sure she has plenty, because you're going to pull some out and drop it there for her to get, and do not speak a negative or an unkind word to her. His warnings suggest to me that but for that, what Ruth would have been exposed to in the field. Abuse potentially by men, unkindness, rebuke if she got too close to where they were gleaning. Put in her place, in other words. And Boaz says, we'll have none of that. In fact, she'll have plenty. Well, she does, and we get to the end of the first day at verse 17. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. So Ruth finished the day. She worked right up until evening. And then she took the stalks that she had gathered, and she went to beat out the grain from those stalks. She had a big day here. She had an ephah of barley. And there's not complete agreement on how much that is, but it's generally thought. Think of a bushel basket. It would be the kernels of grain you saw in the hands filling about two-thirds of a bushel basket. That probably weighed 30 to 50 pounds. She's had a day that is unbelievable in so many ways. But at the end of the day, she's got quite an abundance. The blessing of God produced an abundance, in the words of Paul in Ephesians 3:20, beyond what she could have asked or thought. This was incredible. She's taking a huge haul back to the city. Verse 18. She took it up and went into the city. And her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. So you can imagine, one day out, and she comes back with this gargantuan harvest from that day of barley grain. And Naomi is stunned. And not only that, you remember the leftover roasted grain from lunch? She's brought her take-home box from the reaper's lunch table, and she's given the excess to her mother-in-law. It's a great day. It's a great scene here. Naomi is amazed. Verse 19, her mother-in-law then said to her, "Where did you glean today?" You can just hear that. Where on earth did you go? And where did you work? And then look what she adds before Ruth can answer. "May he who took notice of you be blessed." Naomi knows this doesn't happen ordinarily. This is off the charts, what's happened to Ruth. One day in the field. And so she says, "Whoever was kind to you, I want to be blessed." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." Excuse me. Now we're beginning to tie some things together. Look at verse 20. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness," pardon me, "to the living and to the dead." Let me just stop there for a second. She's commenting about Boaz and says, Boaz has extended hesed to the living, that's Naomi and Ruth, and to the dead, that's Elimelech, Mahlon, and Chilion. And Naomi said to her, "The man is our relative. He's one of our closest relatives." She's calling him the word Goel, the kinsman redeemer word. He is our close relative. This has great significance, and we'll see this develop as we get on into chapters 3 and 4. But before we do, let's pause here to get a little bit of background in the law for this role of the kinsman redeemer and what God intended to have happen in the life of Israel. When we get to chapter 4, we will see that Naomi needed to sell land that she owned, which would make sense. She's a widow. She's without necessary support. Well, the law regarding redemption of land is set forth one place as Leviticus 25, verses 23 to 28. We'll just look briefly at that so we can have the context for what's coming in these next two chapters, particularly 4. "The land, moreover, shall not be sold permanently," God instructs them, "for the land is mine. For you are but aliens and sojourners with me." Isn't that interesting? God says, Palestine is mine, and you are the foreigners here. I've allowed you to be here, but I own it. "Thus, for every piece of your property, you are to provide for the redemption of the land." Verse 25. "If a fellow countryman of yours becomes so poor he has to sell part of his property, then his nearest kinsman is to come and buy back what his relative has sold." In other words, hard times, sell the land, but it doesn't leave permanently. It's a right of redemption where this nearest kinsman, this Goel, comes and buys it back. So it's back in the family. You probably don't read the details of the mortgage documents that you sign when you close on a house. And you guys, this is coming yet for you. But in that big stack of paperwork, in your deed of trust, which is the mortgage instrument, you will have waived, I'll guarantee that everybody here who's signed one of those, waived the equity of redemption. The concept of redemption has carried on through the law, even to our current time and our current law in Tennessee. So to be sure that if I don't pay my mortgage and the bank forecloses and sells my property to someone else, they don't want to have to deal with me exercising a right of redemption later on. to get the property back. So in all the paperwork, the good lawyers for the financial institutions make sure that we waive the right of redemption. God did not waive the right of redemption. He says there will be a right of redemption here. A near relative will come and buy the land back. This is how it goes on. Or in case the man has no kinsman, but so recovers his means to find sufficient for redemption, then he shall calculate the year since its sale and refund the balance to the man to whom he sold it, and so return to his property. Makes sense. If you get back on your feet financially, you can go redeem it yourself. Make the fellow whole and get your land back. But if he has not found sufficient means to get it back for himself, then what he has sold shall remain in the hands of the purchaser until the year of Jubilee. But at Jubilee it shall revert, that he may return to his property. God was concerned about the land that he allowed Israel to have remaining with his people. He expressed it there in the law. Now what we see in that text is simply the nearest kinsman comes and redeems the land. We've read the whole narrative of Ruth. We know that at the end, Boaz says, you also have to take Ruth to the actual closest kinsman. This rite of redemption here in Leviticus does not speak to a wife. It's really a different subject. And it's called the levirate marriage in Scripture. Levirate is a derivative of the Latin word levir, which means husband's brother. Stick with me just a little bit more here, because I think it's worthy background to have. In Deuteronomy 25:5, we have the provision for levirate marriage. When brothers live together and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her to himself as wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. The idea was that the deceased husband would have an heir through his brother's marriage, the levirate marriage to the deceased brother's wife. And then he could be the heir to receive the inheritance of his dead father. So there's that provision in there, but you're thinking about Naomi and Ruth and Elimelech and Mahlon, the husband of Ruth. Mahlon only had one brother. That was Chilion, and he died in Moab. So it's a very interesting thing when Boaz will get to the town council where the right of redemption is being exercised. Boaz will go to the spirit of the law and say, this is what needs to be done. And when the other fellow doesn't want to do it, Boaz will step up and say, I will do it. And take both Ruth and pay for the land as well. As we get to that, keep this in mind, because we see both here both the kinsman redeemer and the right of redemption, and also the concept of the levirate marriage. Now look with me at verse 21 as we wind up chapter 2. Then Ruth the Moabitess said, furthermore, he, which is Boaz, said to me, you should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest. In other words, Ruth is telling her, he's even told me to stay right there for protection. Naomi in verse 22 responds. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids so that others do not fall upon you in another field. Great danger for Ruth out in the barley fields gleaning at this time. But God protected. She sought refuge under the wings of the God of Israel, and he gave her Boaz for protection. Verse 23, so she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. One further observation here. We had this long account, didn't we, of the first day she gleaned and what happened on that day. And it was quite significant. From what I've read, when it says she gleaned until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, she went back 6 to 7 weeks to glean in the fields of Boaz behind his reapers. Now, what's the significance of that? Well, Ruth's a trooper there. We get that. But in addition, there's no further report of any interaction between Ruth and Boaz during that time. I say that because Boaz didn't see Ruth in the field and think, she's a beautiful young Moabite woman. I would sure like to have her as my wife. Not at all. Boaz looked at her, knew what she had done, and wanted to give her fatherly protection in his realm. And he did. He extended that to her. It will make the drama of what happens next quite significant as Ruth and Boaz interact again at the end of the time of the harvest. But that comes in chapter 3. As we close, if we believe God, who through the psalmist David said this, "In your book were written all the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them." Then wherever you and I find ourselves at this moment in life, God has known about. He's expected since before we were born. He knows our days. Our culture pushes us to achieve the highest possible goals, the greatest notoriety, to become the biggest success we can possibly be, to focus on ourselves. God teaches us through Ruth that he simply wants us to honor him in the details of ordinary life, right where he has put us, right there, even in the barley field. God working through Ruth to introduce her to Boaz, who would ultimately become her husband, and allow her to be the grandmother of David and the ancestor of the Messiah. God is working in the details of the ordinary lives of a servant girl and a well-to-do farmer who comes to check on his field and is concerned and prays that the presence of the Lord may be among those working in his field. What a testimony to us, each of them just living life, and yet God working in such a powerful way when they do. God uses those who walk faithfully in the ordinary to accomplish his purposes. We don't see those generally until much later. But may God find us faithful where he has us, in the circumstances of our own barley fields, whether we're the gleaner that just needs something to get by on, or the guy who owns the field. He wants to use us to accomplish his purposes, and he will in such a glorious way. Let's pray. Father, I love this narrative about Naomi and Ruth and Boaz as you weave their lives in ways that they could not possibly understand what you were doing. Through the pain of the death of a husband and the death of two sons, one of which was Ruth's husband, the loss with all of that, the return to Bethlehem for these two women without resources, and acting as someone with the need to eat, you honor and protect and direct the lives of those who have returned to you and sought refuge under your wings. Thank you, God, that you have known where we live today. You've known the details of our circumstances. Work through us, we pray. Give us the faith to trust you, that you have us right where we're supposed to be. Help us to be faithful to you as we live out life here today. In Jesus' name.